call the Senate Committee on Health Policy and Public Affairs to order on this beautiful day, May 23rd, 2007. And I would like to apologize to the committee. I was testifying over in the House side. So I'd like to open a public hearing on 2952 and call Cindy Becker and Representative Tomei, who is the committee that I just came from, and she's chairing that committee.
Tomei's not here.
She's gonna be last night. Here.
Please proceed.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Cindy Becker. I'm the director of the Coalition for Healthy Oregon, or COHO. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak about House Bill 2952. COHO does not support, is in opposition to 2952. The purpose of the bill is to require the, as amended, is to require the fully capitated health plans to report the salaries of the top three executives. In concept, it's not an issue of transparency that we have a problem with. The concern is that the fully capitated health plans, we're not clear why they're being singled out. If this, in fact, is an important policy issue for the legislature, then we would suggest that every provider that does business with the state, particularly with the Department of Human Services, also provide that information. So, again, it's not that that we have a problem with providing that information. It's the concern is that we're not being treated as providers. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, you're the Representative DeMay, and you are the only two that have signed up, and you wrote that you were against it. I'm not sure. I think we'll just anyone here to testify on this bill? Until we get Representative DeMay, I'm going to close. Any questions for Ms. Becker? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing at this point in time, and then what's the next thing I should do?
3103.
And let's open a public hearing on 3103. And Nancy Nathanson, Representative, and Joel Ario, please come forward. Or who's? Yeah. Oh, there's Representative Tomei. Will you? Do you mind?
No,
since
fine.
She has a committee,
yep.
I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2952. Thank you. I told everyone, Representative Tomei, that I just came from your committee. So it's like obstacle
chair.
Course going back and forth here and there and not knowing where we are.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and committee. I'm Carolyn Tomei, State Representative from House District 41, representing the City of Milwaukee and parts of Southeast Portland. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 2952. House Bill 2952 is a very simple bill that stems from a news article that's attached to my written testimony regarding administrative costs for health contractors. Currently, commercial insurers must disclose executive salaries to the Oregon Insurance Division when filing their annual statements. Contractors with the Oregon Health Plan, however, do not. House Bill 2952 would require insurance contractors with the Oregon Health Plan to file more detailed reports itemizing administrative costs. The Oregon Medical Assistance Programs currently require Oregon Health Plan contractors to file annual reports similar to the commercial insurer vision. However, the administrative information contained in these reports is segregated according to certain categories. It's not detailed enough to determine many specific administrative items like CEO salaries. As legislators, we carefully watch agency administrative dollars. These salaries and benefit packages represent taxpayer dollars being spent for administrative purposes, and prudent oversight demands more detailed scrutiny. The issue here is efficiency, and mostly it's transparency. House Bill 2952 provides an important accountability tool for monitoring Oregon Health Plan contractors. Thank you again for your consideration of the bill, and I urge you to schedule a work session to move this bill from committee with a due pass recommendation. And you do have the article that stimulated this whole study, and the bill in front of you was from the Oregon Health News. And you can see that these folks are not required to state what the CEO salaries are. Can I answer any questions?
Is there any questions? Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much.
I'll close the public hearing on 2952, and I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2952.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2952 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gourley moves House Bill 2952 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I've had frustration over the years with F-chips and the fact that it's really hard to determine where all the money goes, what they do with it, and that's not saying they don't do good things, because they do. When there is profit, they, as a general rule, purchase other services with the profit. I guess I'm just... This is kind of a 30,000-foot view, and I'm not sure it gets us to the detail we need, and so I think, to a large degree, this is more form over substance, and I could support it if it was really drilling into detail, but I don't see it. I mean, all it's doing is making a report on financial condition, and I think we need much more detail, which we currently don't have.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can we call Representative Tomei back?
And as she's coming up, I'm noticing on the very first page, lines 21 to 26, that the department, in the A. N. Gross version, that the department will establish annual financial reporting requirements for the prepaid managed care health services organizations. And I assume that this, does this mean the contractors would need to follow this annual financial reporting requirement also?
Again, could you please refer me to the line?
Yeah, page 1 of
right.
the A. N. Gross,
right.
lines 21 through 26. And it says the department shall establish annual financial reporting requirements for prepaid managed care health services organizations.
Correct. And the department
yes.
then will go ahead to prescribe the procedure mm-hmm. in which the managed care organizations would reveal that information.
And I was just wondering if that gets to your point.
Well, that's the point I'm speaking to, Madam Chair. And it's financial condition. That's a 30,000-foot view. And executive salaries, which is also a 30,000-foot view. So to a degree, we're asking the department to create more reports that aren't going to give us the sort of detail that I think we need. I mean, if we're going to fully assess the book of business.
May I respond to that, Madam Chair? It doesn't give you full information, that's true. We tried to do that, but there was so much resistance on the part of the managed care organizations that finally we went down to just reporting the salaries, just the salaries and benefits of the three CEOs. So perhaps at another legislative session we could get the kind of detail that you're interested in, and I think we would be delighted to do that.
Yeah. Representative Tomei, I think I agree with the direction you wanted to go. I just don't think this gets there, and so I'm not sure creating another report actually gets us any further down the road than we currently are.
Any other comments?
My staff is just pointing out to me that this is the form that they fill out now, that they just don't exactly elucidate what the CEO salaries are. And it just seemed like a very bright omission there when other healthcare organizations do have to let you know what their CEO salaries are, which is sort of a startling fact when you look at those. But the organizations that are directly contracting with the Department of Human Services for Oregon Health Plan dollars do not have to list what their CEO's salaries are.
Okay. Any further discussion? I do see this as a beginning. We still have a lot of transparency issues to deal with, and the fact that this seems to be a compromise from what the original bill is, I'm comfortable. Is the rest of the, is there any opposition? Well, the clerk should call the roll. Let's put that, yeah.
Senator Carter?
Yay. Motion made.
Senator Courtney?
Yes. Yes.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Kamala Anderson?
Aye. The bill passes, and I will carry the bill. I'd like to close the House Bill 2952, and I would like to open a public hearing on 3103. Representative Nathanson again, and Joe Ario.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We spoke to the committee a couple of days ago. I have no additional information, but I believe that the department representative has some information for you.
Thank you, Chair Montes Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, Joel Ario, Administrator of the Insurance Division within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The question we discussed on Monday was, would there be confusion here when we post these filings immediately upon filing, before they've been approved? Somebody goes up and looks at the filing at that point and assumes that's an approved filing. And so we went back and talked to our staff about how best to avoid that sort of problem. And I think we have a good answer to it, which is we would be very clear on the web page, pending files are over here, and it would explain in no uncertain terms that these are not approved filings yet. These are the initial filings that they will go through a review process. And then over here on the web page would be approved filings, so that somebody who wanted to see what filings are actually in effect could see, could go to the approved filing. Somebody who wanted to look at a filing, remember there are two basic purposes here. One is to make these publicly available so that people can look at them before there is a decision on approval and make comment. That's part of the objective of this bill, is to create that opportunity for people. And then the second part of this process is just pure public accountability. People can see what was filed, what was approved, and make their own judgments about whether we're doing a good or a bad job. We're holding the insurers accountable for transparency with 2213, and this is a form of holding ourselves accountable between what we get originally and what is approved. So we think that process would clarify any potential confusion, and that makes 3103 a workable bill. And as I understand it, there is at this point not any opposition to 3103. There are people who think it doesn't help a whole lot, but nobody really opposed to it.
Is there any problems with some carriers only filing one time a year and others filing twice a year?
Madam
Chair,
there
need to be consistency on that at all?
There are different strategies that the carriers use for how they file. Some file more often than others. This bill would not affect that particular process.
Any other questions? Yes, Senator.
Yeah, Joel, when you're making they file their rate case and you're making the decision, does public opinion factor in, or is it just actuarial data?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, very good question. Under public opinion does not factor in as public opinion, but there are members of the public who do have actuarial expertise that they bring. They hire experts and that sort. They can point out there are other issues in filings besides purely actuarial issues. So you're right that it's potential we get more input than we really need. Some of it may not be relevant, but we believe there could be some organizations that would provide both actuarial data and other data that would be potentially relevant to the decision. But pure public opinion absolutely doesn't play into the process. It's a technical, professional process.
Okay, follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm looking at what problem we're solving here, because I think you do a good job currently in rate setting. I mean, I think it's a well-vetted process. And I'm still seeing the potential for, I mean, the professionals are probably are already engaged at one level or another. I guess I'm still seeing the potential for some confusion if we're posting something that is preliminary and 30 days later posting the actual. And I still have, I'm still not sure what we're gaining by doing that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'd like to add something, if that's all right. And then you can amplify where I don't get the details or technical aspects correct. I think the main point of this really is public accountability and transparency. Oregon has been moving over the years toward greater and greater transparency, making sure that public documents are available for public review, that public processes are open to public review, our agencies doing the work, whether it's accomplishing providing services to citizens, or in this case, the service is in rate setting. Is the agency doing its job well? Is the agency being fair in the kinds of rates it approves? Is it approving rates that are unfair, too high, too low? You know, what are we doing to make sure that the market can succeed, as well as what are we doing to make sure that we're advocating on behalf of consumers? So by posting these filings, which I'm going to turn it into my kind of word rather than the department's words, proposed rate increases. So by posting the proposals that come in, the consumers, if not individual consumers, then the consumer organizations or advocates are able to see publicly and easily what it is the department is considering before it approves rate increases. So that's just my way of translating the department's jargon into what I hope the public will review this as. It's not meant at all for consumers to be able to compare rates to decide which insurance policy to purchase or how their policy compares to another one. That's not the purpose of posting proposed rate increases. The purpose is to understand what kind of information the department is receiving that it must consider before it determines whether a rate increase is appropriate and can be approved. So I consider this an effort to be more transparent and to offer accountability to the public in an area that is just about the highest topic of concern that I hear from the public about costs. It's the cost of health care, of providing health care, access to health care, and health care insurance. So in this very major area that consumers are interested in, this would help consumers and consumer advocacy groups understand better the cost increases in health care.
No, I don't have anything to add to that. That's why we're proud to be on supporting her bill.
Okay, there's no one else signed up to testify. I'd like to close the public hearing on 3103, and I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3103.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3103 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 3103 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Excused.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Cardin?
Aye.
Kim Anderson?
Aye. Motion passes. I'll carry the bill. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3103, and I'd like to open public hearing on House Bill 2002, Joel Arroyo and Ed Niebert.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again for the record, Joel Arroyo, Administrator of the Insurance Division within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. We can be very brief on this one because the bill, House Bill 2002, has the identical content to Senate Bill 587, which this committee approved a few weeks ago, and Senator Cruz carried on the floor. So we would recommend that the committee take the same action it did on the same content several weeks ago and move House Bill 2002 support this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ed Niebert. I'm the Director of Regulatory Affairs for Providence Health Plan. I was also the sort of designated liaison to the work group on this bill from the health insurance community. I'm here to repeat Joel's suggestion that the identical nature of this bill, the 587, sort of renders unnecessary any further testimony. I would only say that the carriers believe that this bill, and in combination with the disclosure proposed under House Bill 3103, represents what we think is a prudent and reasonable approach to health insurance rate review coming out of this session. Thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion?
This is easy.
All right. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2002 and open a work session on House Bill 2002.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2002 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 2002 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And please excuse court. Senator Carter and Senator Courtney, and with that, I'll and Senator Cruz will carry the bill.
It'll be an easy carry.
Yes, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2002. And
which one do we need to go to next?
We're done as far as
okay. Let's do HJM 23. I'll open a public hearing on HJM 23. Shannon, do you want to?
HJM 23 urges Congress to reauthorize state children's health insurance program in a timely manner. We had a Senate memorial very similar to this, and
okay. And you are Janet Bauer. Please introduce yourself. And
yes, Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the committee. My name is Janet Bauer, and I'm with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I am here today to testify in support of HJM 23, which, as you've indicated, directs members of Congress to reauthorize the state children's health insurance program. As you know, it's vitally important to our efforts here in Oregon to cover kids that the federal government do its part. This bill is similar to one already approved by the Senate that we also have supported. This particular bill acknowledges that Congress has allowed significant increased investment in children's health care in designating $50 billion, a $50 billion reserve fund in its recently approved budget for SCHIP reauthorization. Again, I am here in support and would be happy to answer questions.
Any discussion? Thank you very much. I will close the public hearing on HJM 23 and should I work a open? I will open a work session on HJM 23.
Madam Chair, I move HJM 23 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves HJM 23.
Senator Gordley.
Senator Gordley.
Senator Carter sits over
there. I understand that. Moves HJM 23 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And Senator Cruz will carry this one also. And please mark Carter and Courtney as excused. And I close the work session on HJM 23. And I would like to open a public hearing on 3490. Shannon?
Had to step out, so she'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay, Representative Conk. Why don't we just close that? Okay, are there other people to testify on that? Let's have Sean Baird. $34.90.
I just didn't want to testify for Comp.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jillian Fisher with Nanheim Associates, and I'm representing the Oregon State Ambulance Association. Just a quick background on the engrossed version of this bill. When it first came out of LC, there was problems with the language because it was too broad and did not address specifically our issue. We have since collaborated with the insurers and have reached a bill that everybody is okay with. I'm going to turn it over to Sean Baird with Woodburn Ambulance, and he'll just explain some of the details of the bill.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, 3490 is a way to address a problem that we had had getting payment under the PIP portion of auto insurance. And there had been a requirement for a specific form by insurers that required a patient signature on it that was very difficult for us to obtain due to the nature of our work responding to emergencies. A lot of people were not either able or available after the fact to fill out that specific form. So we worked with John Powell to come to some language that we could submit other information that may be available to us from our pre-hospital care medical report or police reports and other things that would establish that the patient was in fact eligible under the PIP to be reimbursed.
It's my understanding that when there's an accident and you need someone to sign a form, if the person's involved in the accident, it's pretty difficult for that person to sign the form. So that's the problem we're trying to address. Is that correct? Representative Kump.
Oh, thank you. Did they already share the... tell you about the bill, Chair Moniz?
Why don't you go ahead with a more detailed explanation?
Thank you. Chair and committee, for the record, my name is Betty Kump, and I serve House District 22, which is parts of North Salem, Woodburn, Jervis, and the rural part of Brooks. And Brooks is a great place to be if you've gone to see the irises lately, but it's a really nice place there right down I-5. I thank you for allowing me to testify on House Bill 34A. If you could get that to committee staff, I have written
3490A.
This bill addresses public and private emergency ambulance services. Currently, while emergency caregivers are performing life-saving actions to accident victims and other medical needs, they need to acquire a patient's signature in order to receive compensation from insurance companies. Obviously, it is not the top priority at emergency scenes to get a signature from the person that's been injured, and providers have to then sometimes track down patients at the hospital or even in their private homes. House Bill 3490A requires payment from auto insurance companies as soon as the ambulance service provides sufficient information for the insurer to determine if the patient's eligibility for personal injury protection benefits do exist. After the first public hearing in the Health Care Access Committee on the House, the automobile insurance companies and the emergency ambulance service providers, this is our team, work together to bring forth this bill that you see today. Benefits will be paid to ambulance service providers by insurers based on the forms that do not require a patient's signature. I really commend the auto insurance representatives and the ambulance service providers to bring forth this consensus agreement. House Bill 3490A has no opposition and will assist many small businesses and agencies to continue their services, and I ask for your support.
Any discussion? Thank you very much. Do you want to say
Madam
something?
Madam Chair, John Powell representing State Farm Insurance Companies. Madam Chair, this was more difficult than it seems because PIP covers additional people beyond the named insured in the family. If you have a passenger with you, that person is covered under the PIP in that case. And so there are circumstances when the insurance company knows nothing about the person who's claiming a benefit, and that means you can't just say pay, because they don't know who this person is. They know who their named insureds are and that sort of thing. So we define proof of loss as instead of a form, when the insurer receives information where they can tell that they're liable for that claim, they are to pay that claim. And to give them some peace of mind in maybe doing that too quickly, there is a provision that says if it's done in error, that the provider will pay them back. So it's a very, very good bill.
Great. All right. Yeah.
No, just a thumbs
up. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3490, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 3490.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3490 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 3490 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. Mark Carter and Courtney as excused. And who would like to carry the bill? Senator Gordley. Senator Gordley will carry the bill, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3490. And I will open a work session on House Bill 2158. And colleagues, we did have an amendment. We're not going to be entertaining that amendment. We're going to go with the bill as is. Is there any discussion on that?
Thank you.
Yes.
Madam Chair, if staff could establish for the record what the bill as is means so that everybody's clear on where we are.
House Bill 2158 modifies the role of the Advisory Committee to the Director of Veterans Affairs. It states that the Director will get advice from the Advisory Committee upon using funds available to the Department to the Director of Veterans Affairs. And same with procedural rules, that they will get advice from the Advisory Committee. The amendment that the committee is not entertaining would require, make it a Senate confirmation and for the director, and that the advisory committee would not be able to override that confirmation.
So basically the amendment was that the governor may consult, and that was what the contention was, and so we're not entertaining that, and we're leaving it as it was, and where everyone's sort of happy, I think.
Very good.
All right. Yes, I'm ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2158 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 2158 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? I opened a work session, I thought.
Mm-hmm. She did.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Okay. And so, where was I then?
You're about to bang the gavel and say it was approved.
Okay, and there's no opposition. Courtney and Carter are excused. And who would like to carry this bill?
Madam Chair, I was carrying it once. I can do it again.
Oh, Senator Cruz.
Let's hope it has a better fate this time.
Okay, Senator Cruz will carry the bill. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2158. And we will open a public hearing on, which one are you here for, Representative?
2927.
We'll open a public hearing on 2927, Representative Cannon.
Can I bring up Mike Seeley as well?
Yes, and Mike Seeley, okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ben Cannon, State Representative of District 46 in Portland. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. I bring to you House Bill 2927A, which would set up a task force to look at the anatomical gift industry in Oregon. The first thing I want to point out to you is that we're talking about, you've had several bills dealing with anatomical gifts, transplants, et cetera, and I want to be really careful to distinguish what this bill is about and to point out that it's different from the other bills that you've heard in this committee. This task force would look into a particular area of anatomical gifts that are for research purposes. So we're not talking about the transplant industry. We've already had bills related to transplants. This is about anatomical gifts. This problem or potential problem came to my attention from a constituent who works in a funeral home and was deeply concerned about the evidence he saw that bodies that were donated for research purposes, for science purposes, were coming back to the funeral home from the for-profit company that was harvesting the body parts in really, really bad shape. And I don't think he's here today. I'll spare you the stories. But they were disturbing. They were gruesome. There appeared to be, in his view, not only unethical treatment, but also treatment that just does not follow the standards of practice that those in the funeral home industry are accustomed to. The point of this bill is to set up a task force that would study that industry, would hear, you know, learn more about that industry, and would come back to the legislature with recommendations about how that industry should be regulated. It is not currently subject to regulation by our, you know, funeral and mortuary board. It's not subject to other state regulations. It's we're sort of the Wild West on this anatomical gifts industry. We heard testimony that it is typically you know, low income folks who respond to advertisements that where the for profit company says they'll pay for cremation services if the family donates the deceased body to the company for you know, research purposes. I, given what I've heard, am very concerned about what may be happening in this industry. One of the experts, who I think you probably know already, is Mike Seeley. I want to turn it over to him to give you his perspective on this. I'll stick around for questions.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's good to be here again. I have some testimony that I've submitted, and actually I think I'll just speak to this. This is what the testimony submitted when the House bill came up. I think that Representative Cannon's bill is timely. There are three domains, and you're familiar with most of it through the other bills, where there are anatomical gifts for transplantation that makes a difference in enhancing and saving lives. Those areas are highly regulated by the federal government, by the FDA. The iBank and Tissue Bank are registered and regulated by the FDA. Our organ procurement organization is regulated by the federal government. Everything that we do has oversight, and we are also registered with the FDA. There is a whole other area of donation that has been historical because it's supported medical education and continues to do that, and that's the anatomical gift of whole bodies for research and study. The traditional route for that has been whole body donation to universities. Universities have programs set up for medical students. They have policies and procedures and some standards that they follow. But overall, the entire endeavor of anatomical gift for research is not regulated by any state agency or any federal entity. I had the opportunity to serve the Secretary of Health and Human Services on the Oversight Committee for Transplantation, and we brought this forward 3 years ago and presented it to the FDA. And since this type of donation does not result in those gifts going into people for transplantation purposes, the FDA felt they didn't have a role. And there are a number of states, actually Minnesota, New York State, and others that are concerned about this. And the idea of a task force to look at, I think, is very timely. Without any oversight whatsoever, we have no idea of knowing how those gifts are made, where they go. Most of the gifts go to skills labs where people learn to use equipment in the medical arenas, but we have no way, and no one has any way of knowing or tracking where those gifts go, the interstate transportation of those gifts, and then what are families and what are the public being told about what's happening with their loved ones' gift, their bodies. And I don't think there's a need to go into that detail. We've been there before. It's not that the intention here isn't good. What's happened in Oregon is we have a number of freestanding for-profit and not-for-profit organizations that have established themselves, primarily because there is no oversight, is my assessment of that. And also we have a higher rate of cremation in our state. And so the opportunity to provide cremation as a service in exchange for the gift for research is entertained by a lot of people. I don't think that I've done some research. I don't think that falls under valuable consideration, which is against federal law, because many of the anatomical gifts acts speak about the event of cremation as a normal part of the mortuary service. So, in a sense, cremation is regulated by the mortuary board, but not a regulation of these individuals and what they're doing in their organizations. So I think, again, it's a cutting-edge thing for Oregon to consider putting together a task force to look at this and examine it closely and come up with some recommendation. I think there will be a parallel effort. My understanding of my colleagues on the committee I left to the federal level is that that topic is still alive at the Secretary's committee. So there are some in-concert things that could be going on, and I believe that the Minnesota has addressed this as well in their legislature.
Great.
It's about transparency and accountability.
Any discussion?
Yes. Madam Chair, I have a question and a concern. I note that in the bill, on page 2, lines 18 and 19, the Legislative Administration Committee shall provide staff support to the task force. And my question is it appropriate for the Legislative Administration Committee to provide staff support for this type of task force? What is the precedent for that?
Madam Chair, I'll take that, Senator Gordley. We hunted around for a possible home for this committee. My understanding is that historically this legislature has not chosen to house task forces, interim task forces with the legislative administration. However, this is at least the third, maybe the fourth bill, to my knowledge, this session, that has presumed that the Legislative Administration Committee could provide staff support in the interim for this work. We ended up getting a fiscal on the bill that presumed that we would have to go out and hire more staff than Legislative Administration had expected during the interim. They're not sure how many other task forces they'll be charged with or how many committees will be meeting during the interim, so it may represent quite a bit of additional incremental work. However, I've spoken to Rick Berkobian, who has expressed his willingness to take on this and other task forces. They understand it to be part of their charge during the interim, and somewhere in this Ways and Means process, we'll get to the point where they sort of line up the bills that have that have Legislative Administration support, and then figure out if we can afford to serve them all. But if you have suggestions about other places that we could house this committee, we'd be open to them. The other thing I should add is that we have received offers, including from Mr. Seeley. I don't want to speak for him, but to provide some of the support that would be required to task to staff this committee.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, in that effect, most of the designated participants in this task force, I think, find this a pressing issue that needs to be looked at. We have been meeting and discussing, I think, I can't speak for the other people that would volunteer to do this, but I see this as a voluntary effort that I would expect, for example, if I were appointed to this committee, that I would take on my own cost, my own organization. The transplantation around the country actually has thrived on the fact that we all volunteer our time on national committees, and the organizations carry those incremental costs, if that's of any help. I can't speak for other people who might be appointed, but I would speak for myself, and I've discussed this with my colleagues in the tissue and iBank arena, and they feel the same way. It's an important issue. To us, it's something that we would naturally participate at our own expense.
Well, Madam Chair, I would just follow up to the good representative's comments and say that it seems to me that what would be appropriate would be to, by way of taking action on the measure, would be to send it two Ways and Means so that the bill gets the same scrutiny that other bills that are requiring task forces, that it gets the same scrutiny, and that there's some standard of decision making about how we're going to meet the staffing needs of these different task forces. That's the question I have. That's the concern I have.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I agree with you, and I believe this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. You might know there at the dais, but they clearly, with the eight sort of committee administrators and six committee assistants that they expect to have during the interim, they can't staff infinite number of task forces and interim committees, so there will be some process, probably via Ways and Means, of deciding which ones they're actually able to go forward with. I certainly hope this will be among them, and we're working on getting a revised fiscal that might better reflect what we believe would be the actual administrative costs of this, but that will be a decision, I believe, for the Ways and Means process.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Follow up on the point Senator Gordley made, you know, and you say that, this is a move several task forces are contemplating, and I personally have real issue with an executive branch task force being staffed by a legislative committee. We historically treat ourselves very poorly in funding our branch of government, and I think this sort of move tends to exacerbate the problem. And historically, executive branch task force are staffed by executive branch folks from the agencies of jurisdiction, and I guess, Madam Chair, I just look at the fact that for whatever reason, during my decade in this building, our ability or our desire to give ourselves as a co-equal branch of government the resources necessary to function, we've done a very poor job of that, and I just would have real problem with us taking on a financial responsibility due to the nature of the task force that appropriately belongs on the executive branch nickel. So,
would you entertain a motion to address that issue?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, we have no particular investment in housing it with legislative administration. In fact, the reason I believe the bill was amended to move it there was in our effort to avoid a pernicious fiscal from DHS, for instance, if we had chosen to, you know, house it there. And frankly, we weren't ultimately successful in that since we got a $90,000 fiscal on this bill. So I would be perfectly willing to entertain an amendment, and I could work on getting that to move it to a executive branch agency of your choosing.
Well, Madam Chair, a couple of the other task force that we've dealt with this week actually would be housed in DHS, for example, but the provisions in the legislation were that they would be using. They're bringing in outside money to cover the cost, and that was the way they were able to reduce the fiscal
to DHS.
To DHS, so which I think may be an appropriate way to look at going here. So,
I feel like I will carry this over until next week. And can you and
absolutely
Cruz get together to get that amendment?
Yeah.
Because I think that is an appropriate way to go.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, this is off the top of my head, and Senator Cruz, you may know, if there may be a partnership that could be worked out through the Health Policy Commission. I'm just looking for linkage to some other entity that's health related.
It's worth thinking about. Okay.
It's important, and it is an issue that needs to be dealt with in the state. The respect and care that we need to give for those dead bodies is extremely important, and so we just need to find a way. But I too agree that if the executive branch wants this, then they should be footing the bill.
Madam Chair and committee members, and I think it's a good companion. We've taken some steps with 341, for example, to ensure that we're transparent. And this is, you know, to then look at this closely to see that we address this as well, I think is appropriate. So that's good.
All right. Any other comments? All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2927. And our last bill, I'll open a public hearing on 2832. Shannon, would you... Representative Shields, come forward.
House Bill 2832 directs the Director of Department of Veterans Affairs to assist veterans military service in obtaining screening tests and treatment for exposure to depleted uranium. Creates a task force on exposure to depleted uranium.
And we had some testimony last time.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. If I could bring up the Deputy Director, Ms. Paula Brown, as well, I think we'll be able to iron that out quickly and get you on your way.
Madam Chair, just for the record, I had a conversation with the Director. He's perfectly fine with the bill.
Great.
So,
great.
And they are making accommodations. So my concerns have been addressed.
Excellent.
And then perhaps if Ms. Brown could just talk about that as well as the potential fiscal, just to get it on the record, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to this bill. I'm here today to reassure this committee that the fiscal impact...
Oh, identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Paula Brown. For the record, my name is Paula Brown, the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I'm here to assure the committee that the fiscal impact on this is less than $50,000 for the entire biennium. The department is prepared and will cover that cost within its existing budget and using existing staff as well. We did take the opportunity to discuss the concerns that were raised with the individuals who testified, and those individuals are fine with that. They're certainly here and could verify that if you would like. And I'm glad that the director made that contact with you, Senator Cruz.
He's been a friend for a long time, so.
And I would be happy to answer any questions of the committee.
I think that about says it all. I'm not sure whether or not this has a subsequent referral, but I don't know if they picked one up on the Senate side. Did it?
Yes.
Anything less than $50,000, it's my understanding, does not need to go to Ways and Means.
We'd have to request.
Oh, but it does have the it's
so we'd
right
have to
here.
Request rescission by.
Well, yeah, we will. Since it's less than $50,000, we will send it to the president's office. They will make that determination. We will, if it's all right, we will ask for
requesting
the referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Right.
That would be wonderful. And we can then get this across the floor and to the governor's desk and get going on this important health issue right away.
Okay. Madam Chair, while we have the director here, I wonder if I might inquire, again, this is with concern about the health of veterans returning from combat areas. Do you have any data, information that you can gather or that you can may have already compiled that tells us how many veterans returning are currently waiting for a health-related service, waiting to receive a health-related service?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Gordley, we are working closely with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, Portland, primarily the Portland VA Medical Center, in monitoring the numbers and also taking a look at the statistics of what kinds of health concerns are coming back. And I would be happy to provide information. What the VA is doing is they typically are monitoring their wait times and can give those to you for any given time. Mm-hmm. So I would be happy to get that information back to you.
If you could share that with the committee, I know that the chair shares the same concern that I do. I know all of us have the concern that as folks are returning with mental health challenges and traumatic brain injury and other serious physical injuries, we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can. You've heard me say it before. I'm just one who says that veterans should not have to stand in line and wait for anything. And so I want to know, where are the gaps? What does that look like? And are we doing everything humanly possible to get the services to the veterans on demand? That's where we need to be, and that's what I want to stay on top of.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, if I could just touch on that, because the military department is in the committee that I chair in Ways and Means, as you know, Senator Gordley, we're fully funding the National Guard's very innovative, frankly leading the nation, mm-hmm. reintegration program. Yes. And I've been very impressed with the work that the Adjutant General has done there and his staff in making sure that there is that 24-hour availability should someone have some particularly mental health needs that need addressing right away. In fact, I just thought I'd test the system myself, and so I called them at about 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and somebody picked up the phone on the first ring, and it was a former combat veteran who was ready to assist.
Very good. I know when the chair and I talked, I think it was yesterday, all the days are starting to blend here. We agreed that at the close of this session, we need to be able to identify where we made investments in support for veterans. We need to be very clear about what that looks like and where the gaps are, and we need to communicate that very clearly to all concerned.
Point well taken.
Is there any other further discussion?
Let's do it.
All right. Close the public hearing. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify on this? No one else is in it. Okay. Close the public hearing on 2832. I'd like to open a work session on 2832. And colleagues, there. No, that's all right. All right.
So we're just moving the bill.
Mm-hmm. With rescinding the.
Madam Chair, I move that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded on House Bill 2832.
Is there any discussion on this?
Is that the appropriate motion, or should we send it to the President's desk and request the subsequent referral be rescinded?
We make the motion in committee, and then I send a letter with the bill to the President's office.
Okay. Cool.
Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. Carter is excused.
And so we're moving the bill to the floor. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2832 to the Senate floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves House Bill 2832 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent via the path to the President's office to get it rescinded. I just want to. I know that there is exact verbiage, but we don't have that in front of us.
Senator Gordley.
So Senator Gordley made that motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And Senator Carter is excused. And who would like to carry that bill? Yes, I knew Senator Gordley would like to carry that bill. Close the work session on House Bill 2832. And colleagues, we have two more meetings. And any bills that are going to be heard next Tuesday and next Wednesday need to be posted tomorrow. And today, Shannon wants them today.
Wait, they have to be today. It's by the end of today. They have to be posted.
They have to be posted.
By today.
Okay.
So if there are, I'm trying to remember all the bills that we're going to be posting, and I don't want to forget any, and Shannon has the list of all of them, but we're not sure we've included everyone. So please let me or my office know, or Shannon know, about bills that we want to make sure that we get posted for next week.
3009 is one.
Yeah, okay. I've gotten that information, yes.
Okay.
Can you talk to 420, Senate Bill 420 is stuck in Ways and Means, it's the Environmental Justice Bill. I'd like to get that moving. I'd like to get it out of there and up here.
Okay, Senator Gordley wishes to have, could you explain that? We're on the. Do you want this on the record?
Well, one of the bills I remain concerned about is Senate Bill 420, which is the Environmental Justice Bill. Creates a task force to look at those issues. In two previous administrations, the Roberts administration and Kitzhaber administration, executive orders were established that allowed work around that public policy area to go forward. And there's a great deal of concern out there around the Oregon community that that work be picked up again. And this is our opportunity to do that through Senate Bill 420. We've had conversations with the governor's office about providing staff support and with the various natural resource agencies that would be affected, including DEQ. And this is also a bill that passed the Senate last session and then got stalled in the House. And just want to get it some legs and get it back up here so we can move it forward.
Okay. Do you want it actually be brought back into this committee? No, that's not what you're saying. Okay.
In ways and means, and
yeah.
We need to figure it
that's
out.
That's fine. Okay, great. All right, any other? All right, we're adjourned.